From Colorado Public Radio, I'm Ryan Warner, and this is Colorado Matters. Traditionally, when the polls are open on Election Day, we steer away from political coverage. And tonight, of course, as the polls close, NPR and Colorado Public Radio will bring you results. Our show will be live at this time tomorrow to discuss the political landscape. Today, though, a break from politics to talk about rap. Our guest is CU English professor Adam Bradley, whose new book is called The Anthology of Rap. It compiles the lyrics to hundreds of influential songs, along with biographies of the artists. It's kind of like a hip-hop textbook. Bradley told us about one song that was influential in his own life.
The rap song that I was particularly obsessed with as a kid was Eric B. and Rakim's Paid in Full. I would just listen to those lyrics over and over, thinking of a master plan, because ain't nothing but sweat inside my hand. Those rhymes would just be in my head. The rhythm kind of captured my attention.
Thinking of a master plan, because ain't nothing but sweat inside my hand. So I dig into my pocket, all my money spent, so I get deep up, still coming up with lint.
You'll find the lyrics to this song in Bradley's new book, and he sat down with us to talk about some of the others. Adam, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
How did you get the idea for a rap anthology?
Well, I think the idea started in graduate school, of all places, probably the least hip-hop place on the planet, Cambridge, Massachusetts, when I was a graduate student at Harvard. And a classmate of mine would, in our free time, go play basketball and then listen to music. And the music we were listening to was Wu-Tang Clan, was Tupac, was Notorious B.I.G. And during the day, we'd be going to classes, studying with all of these great literary scholars and learning the formal elements of literary analysis. And we just saw an opportunity to bring the skills that we were honing to bear on the music that we loved.
You're a professor of English now at CU.
That's right.
And does rap make it into your class?
Certainly. I mean, I've had the pleasure of teaching a course on the poetics of rap lyrics at CU last year and again this coming spring. And it's really exciting to bring something that's an immediate part of people's lives into the classroom and hold it up for scrutiny and analysis. That's something that a lot of students aren't used to doing. So I found it really can be inspiring for them, and it's certainly inspiring for me.
Is there a particular song that you use to start the class?
I do, and I use it in somewhat of a tongue-in-cheek way. I use Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, the song that everybody knows. It's played at every frat party, it seems. But I use it to show a connection, even in something like that, even this wildly popular song, to the actual rudiments of poetic language, to the ballad stanza, one of the most old and ancient forms of a poetic language.
And it's in the book.
Certainly.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip, hip hop, you don't stop. Rock it out, baby, rubber to the boogity bang bang, the boogie to the boogity beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet.
When you look at that song, I think you see some things that are obscured when you listen to the music alone. Because when you listen to the song, what you hear is that disco sample. You hear the strong beat, the 4-4 beat. When you look at the lines, what you see is an arrangement of language itself and of stress. As scholars of English, we talk about relative levels of stress in a given line, the words and the syllables that are accented. And you look at that line, now what you hear is not a test. 4 stressed syllables. I'm rapping to the beat. 3 stressed syllables. This pattern of 4-3, 4-3 is what we call the ballad stanza. And it's everything found in everything from Samuel Taylor Coleridge's Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner to Gilligan's Island theme song. It's there.
Which is not in the book, it turns out. I do wonder, though, if rappers are doing this consciously. Hmm. I mean, you're finding a lot of literary history and meaning. And, you know, the beat and the structure. Do you think the rapper in that case was doing that on purpose?
Yeah, I'm not sure if Wonder Mike was sitting around saying, well, let me compose a ballad stanza in the grand tradition of, you know, English verse. That said, I do think there's something so ingrained in our patterns of speech that come out of this rich tradition of poetry, that we find it in everything from commercial jingles to popular songs. And those rhythms are part of our collective inheritance as a culture. And regardless of whether we're coming from the South Bronx or Jersey or Boulder, Colorado, it's there for us to draw from.
What's the audience for this book?
One of the exciting things is to see the audience for the anthology emerging. And there were, of course, the people we knew would be interested in it, hip-hop lovers, people who already know many of the lyrics and will go to the book to find songs that they remember and to remind themselves of things they've forgotten. We also put it together with the idea that people who might otherwise be dissuaded from listening to rap music might find a way in through the lyrics. People who are lovers of poetry, people who are interested in issues of popular culture, of American race relations, of gender dynamics. I mean, any host of themes that capture people's attention. We want this to be something that can be used in the classroom and can be taken right out of the classroom as well and just be used for pleasure.
The Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. writes in the foreword, "At its best, rap, a most serious genre, doesn't take itself too self-consciously or try to overburden its lines with rehearsed wisdom or cant of ideology."
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true. There's a playfulness to so much of hip-hop. There's a way that it looks at itself and its popularity often in a critical light and plays to its audience in that way. So, I mean, you could look at the great clown princes of hip hop, people like Biz Markie or people like Old Dirty Bastard on the other end of the spectrum.
The clown princes.
Yeah, that's what I would call them, because they serve a purpose of both entertainment through their moments of buffoonery, but also As we're being entertained by that, they're actually putting our minds into another zone. They're creating spaces for new kinds of thought and ideas.
What's a song that illustrates that in the anthology?
Well, it's Biz Markie's "The Vapors," which has this playful concept at its center, with the idea of this guy talking about himself and his friends when they were poor, but now that they've made it, how people have changed and started, being interested in them all of a sudden. It's the typical story of someone who goes from rags to riches in a way, but it's done with a kind of playful self-consciousness where Biz Markie talks about how my breath was stinking, I was overweight, I'm ugly and this and that, but you still love me because I'm good at rocking the mic.
After getting rejected, I was very depressed. Sat and wrote some deaf Deuterons at my rest. When I used to come to parties, they make me pay. I would have to beg to get on a mic and rap that day.
See you, English professor Adam Bradley's with us. His new book is called The Anthology of Rap. You have already used the term hip-hop as well. And difference between rap and hip-hop, how do we differentiate there?
Well, the distinction that we make in the introduction to the book is that hip-hop is a culture. It's a broad umbrella term to describe an art form that's usually divided into four elements. And those four elements are rapping or emceeing, DJing, breakdancing, and graffiti art. So all of those are part of hip-hop. Rap, therefore, is a subset of the broader cultural term that we use when we say hip-hop.
Do you rap?
that's I think why I got into doing academics, because I couldn't. This was my way of contributing to the culture. I couldn't rap. I couldn't DJ. I couldn't break dance. I couldn't do graffiti. So this is what I can do. This is the way I can contribute.
That makes me think you at least tried, though.
Well, of course. I think most any of us who grew up in the 80s probably had that piece of cardboard that we tried to do a backspin or a head spin on and almost broke our necks. That's just part of a kind of mid-80s childhood.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. Again, probably one of the least hip-hop places imaginable. But even Salt Lake eventually got some hip-hop. Maybe there was a little bit of a lag, but it came to us even there.
I found one of my favorite rap songs in the chapter titled, not surprisingly, "Rap Goes Mainstream," right? And it's from the Fugees.
Yeah.
in 1996. The tune is called Ready or Not. And oh, yeah. I have sat in the car teaching myself the rap and trying to get the beats, you know, and I rarely succeed. But just I just find it so gorgeous. The lyrics appear in the book, you know, and it's this, I hex you with a witch's brew if you do voodoo. I could do what you do.
You're killing it.
Yes, bless you if you represent the fool, but I hex you with some witch's brew if you do voodoo. I could do what you do. Easy. Believe me, frontin' give me heebie-jeebies. So while you imitating Al Capone, I be Nina Simone and defecating on your microphone. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly.
Lauryn Hill is on vocals there. You know, this is where Wyclef Jean got his start.
That's
as
right.
Well. So when I look that up, the lyrics are there, and then you provide a bit more information about each song. What is it that you're trying to do with the book?
Yeah. I mean, the goal is to slow things down a little bit when it comes to rap. I think one of the wonderful things about rap music is that it's often so kinetic and engaging. You know, we hear these rapid-fire flows and beats coming at us. And often, because of that, we're kind of carried away by the music to the point where we don't have the time or don't take the time to observe what's actually going on the level of language.
I felt that, you know? Actually in the Fugees song.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly it, yeah. And so it slows things down. It lets us see the kind of small music that's in language itself. Even in that passage you just recited, that back and forth of the syllables and sounds is something that we kind of take in when we're listening, but we don't necessarily see it play out in the way that we do when we look at it in print.
You know, in a fair number of songs, the N-word is used, and some rap has come under fire for it, you know, violent language and language that demeans women. How do you deal with that? I mean, is that poetic?
Well, if we took away all the explicit language from literature, we would be left with precious little. I mean, I've just finished teaching some Shakespeare, and there were some things in that actually are quite explicit. Some of the most explicit descriptions of sex and violence can be found in some of our greatest literature. So that alone doesn't disqualify rap. That said, there is a special kind of offense that is sometimes embodied in rap lyrics. You mentioned the N-word, the B-word, and garden variety curse words of all types. They're all there. But part of rap's meaning comes out of that explicit language. This was, after all, a culture that in KRS-One, the great rap artist's words, it was a culture that grew out of struggle, that grew out of a necessary desire to push against hard circumstances. He said that hip-hop was the final conclusion of a generation of creative people oppressed with the reality of lack. And I think in these lyrics, oftentimes you hear just that, pushing against that reality of lack, demanding more, even if it has to be taken.
KRS?
KRS-One, the great MC from Boogie Down Productions in the mid-80s, still quite active, still quite vocal to this day.
In putting together this anthology of rap, Adam Bradley, did you find people who were really good at the lyric side but like really bad at the music artistry side?
Yeah, that's a really good question, in the sense that one of the other things that comes out of seeing these lyrics on the page is that you now have to confront the rhymes as poetry, distinct from the music. So often, I mean, the reason why we love a song has little to do with the lyrics. The reasons we love, say, MC Hammer's You Can't Touch This or Tone Loc.
Well, that was the Parachute Pants.
Yeah,
actually.
Well, that's true.
Sorry.
Or Young MC or any of these artists that were really, really huge in the mid to early 90s. The reasons why we love those had very little to do, I think, with the lyrics themselves. And so consequently, you really won't find those particular songs in the book, not because I didn't enjoy them as a young person growing up, and I don't even still enjoy them on the sly today. But because there are certain songs whose lyrics demand an audience's attention in a way that's distinct from simply popular entertainment, that ask for something from us, that demand for us to pay attention. And that's really what we see in the best lyrics in this book. They describe a world. They describe a world in full.
And that's why you can't touch this. I mean, it just didn't translate well to the page.
It didn't. I mean, some things do, some things don't. And that's been one of the revelations for me is the things that surprised me that actually kind of grew in my estimation as a hip-hop fan, and those that didn't necessarily fall but certainly didn't seem to be as well represented by appearing in print.
And how about the opposite? Someone who you found once on the page to be mm-hmm. profound or incisive, but who's musically just isn't that good.
Well, gosh, I mean, there are a number of artists who haven't been blessed with the best production, you know, the best musical production. Say an artist like Razkaz. He's kind of a underground L.A. rapper and probably one of the most gifted lyricists around. If you see what he does, particularly with rhyme, multisyllabic rhymes, just an amazing artist. And we have a couple of his songs here book.
Read one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. So he has one song called Order Out of Chaos, or Order Out of Chaos, that goes something like this. The story begins like a Dickens novel, David Copperfield, I Am Born, and Nah, We Can't All Just Get Along, 5996 AL, the Year of Light, Illuminati Border on a New World Order. And it goes on and on and on from that, just with these arcane references and kinds of zigs and zags of language. But the track itself is in some ways a little dated.
The story begins like a Dickens novel, David Copperfield, I Am Born, and on we can't all just get along, 5996 AL, the Year of Light, Illuminati border on a new war order, and the fight, the struggle, sort of kind on some rapping shit, but real activists be on death watch like Mumia.
It's the LA rapper Razkaz and a song called Ordo Ab Chao, which is Order Out of Chaos. And it's one of the many selections in the anthology of rap put together by our guest, CU English professor Adam Bradley. When you're teaching this to your students, how do you make it more than like just a fun walk down memory lane? Like, oh, remember this one? Wasn't that a great one? And really make it a meaningful academic experience?
One thing is that for most of my students, there is no walk down memory lane that goes past, say, 98. So you know, that even going into the earliest two decades of hip-hop is a kind of lesson in history as well. When we talk about the lyrics, we don't simply just talk about them in isolation. We talk about them in the context of their social, economic, and political bases. So we end up talking about the latter half of the 20th century and into the 21st, using music as the way in.
There are songs whose lyrics are so hard to decipher. You know, either the singer is kind of swallowing the word or it's moving so fast.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have challenges in putting the book together of making sure you got the words right?
The primary challenge of the book was probably transcription. Anybody can go online and find these lyrics Googling.
But they're like wrong a lot.
I mean, that's the problem. They're 98% of the time they're wrong. So the first thing we said, if we're going to do this book, we're going to do it right, and we're going to take the time and make the effort that we need to get the lyrics as accurate as possible. So that meant often listening to songs dozens and dozens of times with several different people's ears. It also meant, when possible, getting in touch with the artists themselves and having them review the lyrics.
Was there a particularly difficult one you remember?
Oh, yeah. And several of them, but one that comes to mind is by this artist, Jean Grey, who's one of the probably the finest female MCs out there right now, semi-underground. And we have several of her songs in here, and there was one line I just kept going over and over and over and over again and just couldn't for the life of me figure out. So finally, I found her on Facebook and sent her a message, and I was shocked that she responded the next day. And we kind of exchanged several messages, and she ended up fixing the lyrics up so that they were spotless.
Let's hear the phrase that was difficult to understand. Stays on something, and sue me later.
I kept saying stays on the gist. I kept writing that, and she came back, and it simply stays on the list, defame a name so they can sue me later. And that makes perfect sense, but it took me literally months to get that right.
Adam, thanks so much.
Oh, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Selections of very buried and proper things. I'm married to rap like J-Lo to scandals. Light up a room like J-Ho's birthday candles. I'm that bright like Stephen Hawking's computer chair. Asked out a teacher on a Sadie Hawkins dare.
Adam Bradley is an associate professor of English at the University of Colorado at Boulder. He's co-editor, along with Andrew Du Bois, of the Anthology of Rap.